This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And welcome to The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. Dinothor Archer. Thank you for joining us another Tuesday night on Guardian Radio, Talk Radio 96.9, for another interesting show on all things health, wellness, and things pertaining to the Bahamian society. And so we have another interesting show this week. Last week, we had a wonderful panel of doctors that came and gave us a different perspective on treatments and just kind of doing wellness within the COVID pandemic and how to kind of have some other things inside your plan with dealing with COVID and the pandemic. It was a very interesting show. I got a lot of really great feedback and a lot of people who wanted to also know how to support the show. So you're here with me, Dr. D. Archer. I'm a family physician. If you want to support the show, you can check one of my business lines, 326-1521 or 429-4880. You can also find me, of course, at Medical Concierge Service, our main sponsor for the show. We are located in Collins Avenue, number 272 Collins Avenue in the Bahamas Heart Center. We deal with all family medicine. That means we take care of the entire family. We're still open to take NHI patients. And of course, we take all of the most major insurances. So if you want to give us a call, find out more about our services, or about how you can be involved with the show, just give me a call there. You can also check out our Facebook and also for The Doctors In on Guardian Radio, as well as Medical Concierge Services is on Facebook. We also have a website, medicalconciergeservices.com, mcsfamilymedicine.com. That's mcsfamilymedicine.com. And you can catch us online, one of those places as well. We do a lot of home care services as well as in-clinic services. So, you know, we do a lot of different things. So check out our page. A lot of things that came out of last week's show, just to mention something like long haulers. Someone sent me a message about long haulers and doing a show. I do believe I did one earlier last year because I kind of saw where this was going. And so I've been dealing with a lot of treatment for viral illnesses for quite some time. So we do have some protocols that we do for those who may have had COVID and would like a little pick-me-up to help them get back optimized to where they want to be. So call one of those business lines, 326-1521, or our WhatsApp line, 429-4880, to get more information. We've got people joining us online right now. Hi, I'm Ezra Pratt, Vanessa Colby. Thank you for joining us so far as more people come in on that line. So we are on Facebook. That's The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. D. You can find us on Facebook and you can watch there or you can listen here on the radio. We've got a couple of phone numbers if you want to call in later in the show. Of course, Guardian Radio's numbers, and let me just pull those up. It's been a little while. Okay, the internet is running a little slow. Okay, there we go. Our contact numbers, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. I hope those of you online can hear me clearly. We got an interesting topic tonight. I'm going to take any questions if you had any residual questions from last week, but we also want to broaden our conversation because health, wellness, and society all come together in so many different ways. And so we know also we have to look at the economics of all of this and how do we diversify the economy is a really big talk, but how do we do those type of things? So over the next few months, I'm going to take one or two shows just to kind of plug in there some different models of economy that I've just been reading up on and I find interesting. And I hope you guys will find interesting too. Tonight, we're going to talk a bit about the green economy and agriculture and just kind of using our resources in the country to make things better. We're going to be recovering from not just COVID-19 from a health perspective, but also financial perspective. And so those are conversations we also need to have. And so I have a special guest with me tonight. We're going to talk a bit about the green economy. We're going to talk about a little bit about agriculture here in the Bahamas. And so my guest is getting into that green space and going to discuss a little bit about that. So I just want to define to me, I guess, what the green economy is in a broad sense. And then let's bring it down to what it means in an agricultural sense. And then what does it mean here in the Bahamas to be involved in that space? And so the green economy by the UN Environmental Program is basically defined as a low carbon, resource efficient, socially inclusive. In the green economy, growth in employment and income are driven by public and private investment into such economic activities, infrastructure, and assets that allow reduced carbon emission pollution, enhanced energy and resource efficiency, and prevention of loss of biodiversity and ecosystem services. So it involves a bunch of different things, but it looks at the sustainable ways of doing, creating wealth in your economy. And so how do you use the resources that you have sustainably in a way that's equal and fair to everybody and will reap the rewards and benefits long-term? And as we go into this concept of that economy and agriculture, we see agriculture is important to health. Growing your own food, having those resources in place allows you to kind of govern how, not only how you spend your money, but how your what your people put in their body. And that's why I found it very, very interesting. So these green investments need to be enabled and supported through targeted public expenditure reforms, changes in taxation and regulation. So the UN basically is promoting the development path of how to use our natural capital as well as our financial capital to basically create economy and assets for the public benefit for poor people who live based on natural resources and how to do this sustainably. So with me tonight, I have Mr. Nathaniel Higgs. Nathaniel, are you there? I see you went a little blank there. Are you there, Nathaniel? You can unplug your mic.
Yes, I'm right here. Yeah. Good night, good night.
Okay, so Nathaniel is a Bahamian businessman, entrepreneur, and youth coach. You are trying to get into that green space right now. You've seen the importance of this. Kind of just tell me why you thought as a Bahamian it would be important to get into the green economy space. And tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Okay, good night, Bahamas, and good night, world. I've basically been in the green economy from I went to Crooked Island to live with my great-grandparents back in, that would be about 1990, I can't remember exact date, but when I moved to Crooked Island, I learned what they call it, sustainable farming, whereas my great-grandparents had 7 fields and 1 acre was the smallest field they had. So I grew up around agriculture and being around old people, you get that great-grandmother's wit. And you know, them old people, they know the bush. You know, my grandparents never came to the hospital unless they were very, very, very ill. Other than that, they turned to the bush for everything. So being around that, growing up in that environment, I have learned to become a
We just lost you a little bit, Nathaniel.
Okay, you can hear me clearly now?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, but I'll make it short so I don't run on too much. But so learning that bush medicine that everybody calls it, which is medicinal medicine. I just decided after, because I always do it for my kids, them, every from November until winter is over, I always mix a concoction with ginger, cinnamon, and lemon. I just mix a drink. And they like it so much, they don't even know it's medicine. They just think it's a refreshing drink, but it's actually medicine. And so by me doing that to them and explaining it to them, when the COVID-19 came around, and I said, listen, the only thing y'all got to do is focus on following the protocols and make sure y'all drink a cup of this every day. And so I made sure I make a big pitcher once a week, and everybody drinks out of that. And I keep replenishing probably half of the week. So they realize it's medicine and it tastes good.
So that got you into growing.
I've never stopped growing it. That's the thing. I just decided to start making it medicinal now. So the first thing I've started to grow in abundance is oregano, because oregano is anti-flammable and anti-fungal. Mm-hmm. You understand? So it helps build up your immune system as well as fight any viruses, foreign virus that comes into your body. Because what people don't realize is we create viruses and cancer cells on a daily basis.
We don't internally create viruses, but if our immune systems aren't built up, we can take in viruses.
Immunity.
Viruses. Right. So let's just make
separate the viruses. Exposed to viruses. Sorry.
Right. Yes.
From the bacteria.
You got to get it correct. You're on the doctor's show.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for clearing that up.
You actually are growing. What type of oregano are growing, and why did you decide that oregano was going to be your first crop? And do you see a market for that?
There is a market for it. People just don't know it yet. If that make any sense. But I've been growing Spanish thyme. I've been trying my hard at lavender. And of course, you have other plants that is growing naturally inside the Bahamas, like the mint what's the next one? And fever grass. Right. So I've been growing them. And so when the coronavirus first came introduced to us, the beginning part of 2020, what I did was I had a bunch of fever grass and mint. And what I did, I packaged those and I was selling fever grass and mint package for $8. So I started to educate by just selling the small packages and letting them know, listen, boil the mint and the fever grass every day and make sure all your family get it so y'all can start building up your immunity. So I've been educating people like that.
When we think about growing things and sustainable growth in here, and I'm hoping that you're using also sustainable practices. We don't think about growing mint and thyme and stuff like that in the Bahamas. So that's really interesting that you decided to take that particular. How hard is it to grow those in our climates?
Man, it is easy. If the hardest part is preparing the land and making sure that the soil has enough micronutrients in the soil, because we are what we eat. The same thing with plants. If you want your plant to be potent, you got to make sure the right new soil. Now, being from, like I said, growing up with old people, slash and burn method is the best method for growing any crop.
But that's going kind of out of season. And I think this is where we talk about sustainable development in the sense that new technology and the government being able to help provide that new technology just to make those types of things more efficient. Have you found that there are a lot of resources in the country for like a small farmer like you to be able to modernize your process so that it becomes more efficient for you?
Yes. In fact, that's why instead of me just outright saying it's a commercial farm, I made it a community farm. And why I made it a community farm is what I want to do. First, I've started the pilot farm. And then what I want to do is I want to give everybody in this community a plot on the farm, probably an 8x8 or a 10x10. And I want to teach them to grow different crops. And what I want to teach people that sustainable farming you can do right in your yard. I don't care whether it's an apartment or anything. All you got to do is get a 5-gallon bucket, even cut 1-gallon bottle bucket, get the right soil, put inside of it. You can plant a fever grass plant inside that. You can plant a mint plant inside of that. And you will have enough to sustain you and your family. Now, if you want to commercialize it, you don't only have to grow just the medicinal plants. You can grow the medicinal plants in cooperation with your lettuce, because that's what I did. I grow it in cooperation with my lettuce, with my moringa. What's the other plant? I have tomatoes. You understand? So you don't necessarily only have those medicinal plants. You just gotta practice what you call a horticulture. You gotta plot it out, plant it out, and then go forward. And you should actually seek a landscape consultant who will help you with that, because some people, I mean, they're into the medicinal plant, but it isn't functional in their yard. It isn't functional. And it really comes off because they have rats and roaches going on their plant, which contaminates it. So you gotta make sure, make it viable and also healthy, because if you have rodents coming around your plants and so forth, if you have the garbage next to your medicinal plant, you actually will be contaminating your body by using those plants that are next to a garbage, if you understand what I'm saying.
So even in our small kind of sustainable home planting, backyard farming, there are some things that maybe people need to go out there and kind of research and learn, just so that they're doing things correctly. Agriculture as a business is worth $2.4 trillion worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Almost 20% to a third of the world is actually, about 1.3 billion people work in some type of agricultural field. When we think of agriculture here in the Bahamas, though, we don't think about money. We don't think about the economic pack. Farming, I believe, in this country only makes up about 2% of our GDP, with 90% being tourism and financial services. As a small farmer, what do you think that we need to do in order to increase the size and the amount of people farming and producing money that comes into the country? Really, what we need to do is to get into some type of export, or at least have the money that's going around in the country stay here due to us buying our own resources. What's the biggest challenge there?
Okay, I will make 2 points on that. First of all, there isn't really a challenge more than the will to get it done. That's the only challenge, the will of the people to get it done. Stop waiting on government for you to get out in their yard, weed their yard, and plant that seed. Government can't do everything for you. But what you can do is ask the government to put policies in place.
Well, yes. Well, that's what we're talking about. So we know small scale.
Yeah.
You can get in the backyard, you can do some things. I think government even has some small scale stuff that you can. I know the Ministry of Agriculture was doing some stuff with backyard farming. I know
they're doing an excellent job.
We're also giving out kits, and I thought that was very thoughtful. What I'm saying is that farming is only about 2% of our GDP. It's a very small part of what runs this economy. Do you think that there are things that need to be put in place to improve that? Because as we can see in a pandemic, tourism turned out to be a very difficult driver of the economy in a circumstance like that. As we move towards expanding the economy and including agriculture, what is our greatest issues on becoming bigger, exporting? I know you're just kind of getting into it. Let me know the challenges of starting your farm and being able to do that sustainably.
Okay. The first challenge is, like I said, the will to get it done. Because that sun is hot. That sun is very hot, and not everybody is willing to go in that sun and deal with that. And me, who have basically been around it for most of my life, I can never get used to the sun. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the people have to, you know, have the will to go to their government agencies and utilize the programs that is issued by the Ministry of Agriculture, because there are Ministry of Agriculture programs in all aspects of farming, and they are begging people to get into farming. And in fact, anyway, I don't want to try to politicize it, but I'll have to say it how it is.
Let's not politicize it.
administration. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not running, but I'm only saying what is being done. The present administration was doing a land registry. And what they were saying for agriculture is they wanted to make sure that the land that was given for agriculture is being used for agriculture and not to just build churches and apartments and subdivision. So what they were saying was they wanted to do a land registry to see what all agricultural land is available now and to make sure those lands are used for agricultural purposes. And so now that they had asked people to make sure, put in your application for land and tell us, what do you want to grow? Here are the different programs.
I don't know. I put in, maybe it was prior to this government though, I put in for some land too. I received a letter saying,
We heard you.
We'll get back to you. And
I just let you know.
End of that. And so a lot, I find that, you know, there's a lot of talk. There's a lot of stuff that's written down and stuff. When it comes to execution, you still hear behemoths saying that they can't get to the land. They can't get the resources that we talk about. And so there's a difference between saying this is what's here, this is what we provide, in the actual action of it, because did you get your land through government itself?
Yes, I did. Like I said, okay. I went to two administration,
right?
And I mean, fighting tooth and nail, man. What happened? I can't. First, they tell me I try to get 5 acres here in Nassau. Then they wait a couple of years before they answer me back and say, okay, then you can't. There's no get it on either Freeport, Abaco, or Andres. I made the decision because what I was going to get into was I was going to get into hog farming and cane farming. Well, after, you know, I became an attorney, Karaskian, and we tried to stay away from the pork, I had to like slash back on growing, becoming a hog farmer. You understand? And I decided to just focus on the cane. And I found out that there was a cane farm in Abaco before. So I requested for me to get a piece of that land where the cane farm was, because that means if it was a farm there before, that means the soil is still viable for me to revamp that industry. And so I finally was able, once I put in my application for that, they finally granted it to me. And I thank them for that. And of course, it was right there outside of Marsh Harbor. So when the Hurricane Dorian come, my plans went up for me to go over there and assess the land and see if it's still viable. But right, that was my process. And mm-hmm. So I'm not saying it's an easy process. And that's why I say you have to have the will. If you ain't made up your mind, listen, yeah, I can't do nothing else but do this. I ain't turning back. By hook or by crook, I can get this done. You got to have that willpower, first of all. And once you have that, then you're going to utilize all the programs that the government have available. It doesn't matter what administration comes in. It doesn't matter. That program is in place. As long as you meet the criteria.
I don't think the government, if it's like a particular government, but I just find that all the processes are particularly slow. And you have to make things a priority from that level, because what you do is you frustrate people who have good ideas, people who might time goes by and mm-hmm. people start getting into other things. I think what I'm seeing from the UN directors and other things is, if a government takes a focused approach and makes that a priority and provide the funding and have all the tools necessary, there's no reason why you shouldn't have growth in these areas. With that industry being such a large industry, I mean, you can never really grow enough food.
No, you can't. One person cannot grow enough food for everybody.
Throw out a few things right here. Greening the economy with agriculture. Did you know that increases the number of hungry by 75 million in 2008, 20 million people were pushed into extreme poverty in 2011. In 2011, 900 million people were undernourished in the world, although enough food is for the Earth's population. So we can see that the cost of food, despite having enough food, is going up. And what they find is that you have the countries who are actually the poorest countries where a lot of this food is produced actually don't have a lot of access to this food. And so we look at a country like the Bahamas where we import most of our food, and we wonder why food security in the sense of good, healthy food and food that our local resources have not become a priority.
Well, I can totally agree with you. Like I said, I'm not trying to make it politicize it in no kind of way. But I feel during this pandemic, the government should have focused.
Don't say that here, because you know, they're very touchy about these things.
Yes. But we still have a freedom of speech. They didn't take that away from us yet. But I'll keep it kosher. But
please,
they should have focused on the farmers. Because the farmers was growing the food that was essential. They're growing the sweet potato, the onions, the carrots, the lettuces, and so forth, right? But we had canned goods. And so I'm not knocking those things. But we should have had more veggies and so forth that was grown locally, enhancing the farms to continue, because that is also one of the things that farmers is lacking: funding and support from the government. You understand? Remember, we have a $1 billion food bill every year. If Bahamas can only tap into 20% of that, it will help the farmers all over the country to help finance, to get equipment, to get seeds, and to also keep their farms viable. Also, career opportunities. You understand? I don't believe in just giving Bahamians job. I believe.
Okay, so your connection is going in and out.
Today, you can go and start as operative.
And that's the thing too, because you did mention
it's not just government.
I had this conversation before. Local farmers like yourself, are you getting together to talk about what you need? How do you do that? And how do you collectively maybe make some of these things happen? I know, we don't do a lot of manufacturing. We don't do a lot of canning. We don't do a lot of processing. And these are what really makes the money. So what you're finding is that you're growing the substances and just selling the substances is only one aspect of the agricultural economy. But where the money really lies is what you do with that. I remember a few years back, I think it was the previous government, but there was a large amount of tomatoes that were grown across the Bahamas. Mm-hmm.
So yes.
Farmers, yeah, I listened to everything. A lot of farmers, and they all of their crops came about the same time. And I've told the story before. And there was a news story of how the government was buying the tomatoes to save the farmers and dumping. They were dumping the tomatoes in the bush.
That hurt my heart.
And so we had heaps and heaps of tomatoes that were rotting. If we had simply had a canning industry, if we had simply had some way to use those tomatoes. We Bahamians buy tomato paste all the time. Our tomato paste company has been out of sync for years.
Wasted opportunity.
There has been no push to do that. As a small country, we know that a lot of things, sadly and good, I guess, have to come through the government's hand, because a lot of things are in their power. And sometimes you need a down approach to get things going. So why haven't we moved to that point? I think processing is an issue, and that requires both education, money, and resources. So why aren't we learning from our mistakes? And why aren't
Bahamians just trying to work together? We have a problem working with one another. Every farmers cooperative, if you talk to anybody in those farmers cooperative, they say the problem is everybody won't be chief, but nobody won't be Indian. And see, the government don't like to work with individuals. They rather work with cooperatives. That's why the government has been trying very hardest to work with all the farmers cooperative. And I can tell you, because I tried to start a farmers cooperative, and I can tell you some nightmare stories, but I won't on air. But the thing about it is, Bahamians need to learn to decide to listen, yeah, stay in your lane. If you just do one thing, don't watch what the next person is doing. Long as you complete what you're doing, allow that person to do what they have to do. Yeah, they might fall down on what they're doing, but at least help them. Don't say, oh, I can do it better. Yes, you might be able to do it better, but you have your own to do. Allow somebody to learn from their failures. And that is the issue that I find with Bahamians. You know, and so me, I don't have a problem being an Indian. I don't need to be a chief. That's why in my organic farm, I work with the kids in the community, and I show them different plants and I educate them and so forth. Because what I realize with my children, once I teach them how to grow it, they will eat it. Don't force them to eat something, a tomato, a lettuce, or mix a drink with mint and ginger and cinnamon inside of it. Teach them the value of it first, mix it for them, let them taste it, and then watch them do it by themselves. That's the process that I have learned with my children. I've started doing that with adults in my family. Now everybody on the smoothie and thing run, you know, they mix their greens. Oh, I mixed my green today. This is what I have. I mean, there's a big discussion on what all greens they make. You understand what I'm saying? So people are interested in their health right now. You know, the coronavirus, I wake up a lot of people that listen here, man, I better get off these pills and so forth, because it isn't helping my chronic disease. It's only helping the symptoms, but it isn't curing it. You understand? But when they realize the medicinal plant that is growing in the backyard that they took, what they call weeds, like Gale of Wind, you have kidney stones, you boil some Gale of Wind for a week or two, you notice your kidney stones start to dissipate. You understand? Until the Bahamians learn these different medicinal plants and how to use them, because mind you, there is a large sector of people who still use medicinal plants and understand everything that I'm saying. But because the government knows that the pharmaceuticals, you know, even though every pharmaceutical pill is made from a medicinal plant, the fact is they don't want us to use it.
I would say that as a country, we're missing an opportunity of looking at our medicinal plants and actually studying them in a manner that we can take out there. The problem with medicinal medicine, like bush medicine, is we can't quantify it. So yes. Nobody across the board knows how much Circe you really should be drinking. What mm-hmm. are the effects of it? How does it affect John versus Paul? And so that's where we elevate this conversation to, how do we now say, okay, this is what our forefathers did. How do we take that and present that in a manner that we can say, hey, with confidence? And that's what medicine and study is all about. How do we confidently say X, Y, and Z? So a plant like Circe that's been used for so many years, we should have a breakdown of all the components of Circe, what those components would do, which parts of it be toxic, and how we would then take that into our bodies. So I find that as a part of this discussion on the green economy, which filters into medicine, because like you say, a lot of our medicinal medication have come from what we have established in nature. We are missing a golden opportunity to take our resources and elevate them to a level that we can take to the world. I just want to point out, we kind of touched on some of this as we talked about the security pillars, availability, access, access to land, access to funding, the availability of things, and the availability of resources. We are lucky. We are in a very stable in terms of, we don't have war. Now, we do have hurricanes, and that affected your farm. So all of these things have to be a part of our planning process as we look at agriculture and sustainability. And then utilization from loss and waste to sustain diets, and how do we use the nutritional value of the plants that are here in country. What studies have found is that the people in a country do best when they eat the foods that are naturally grown in that country.
Exactly.
And so you have an increase in the nutrient value. You have an increase in usually the things that are endemic in terms of disease are helped mostly by the things that are grown here in the Bahamas. You mentioned something with the thing about kidney stones. The plant.
That's
Gale-O-Win. So Gale-O-Win, why isn't that taught in our schools? Why aren't our kids able to easily identify? They're coming in and they're studying these things and they're taking that information and they're leaving the country.
Exactly.
What do you think that it will really take to get into these areas for the average Bahamian to kind of understand what's going on there? I mean, is there a call for it? Do you think Bahamians are ready for that?
Of course, man. If you listen to the radio shows every day, Bahamians, this coronavirus has actually scared Bahamians back to the bush. Not to the Stone Age, but back to the bush. You understand? Yeah. Because they realize that, listen, this coronavirus, listen, all I need to do is build up my immune system. And once I build up my immunity, but now they have all these different variants. So all with these different variants, just up the dosage. Instead of drinking the tea twice a week or three times, you feel you have the symptoms or so forth. Now,
you're not a doctor, so I ain't let you prescribe medicine online. Discuss with your physician whatever you are.
That's my personal. Let me put that disclaimer there. That's my personal opinion.
That's Mr. Hicks.
What I've been doing for me and my family. And
I would say with
the flu.
I would say with any medicinal medicine, have a discussion with your doctor. Figure out, especially if you have comorbidities, if you're on any forms of medication. We don't have all the information, but find out if any of those things will affect the medication you're on, because you don't want to do any harm. And so I have a very balanced approach when it comes to bush medicine. I'm intrigued by it. I understand that there's a lot of things that bush medicine can do. And I also understand that medicine is medicine and there's side effects for everything. And so we have to be cautious. You have to have a talk with your doctor. And like with everything unknown, you shouldn't probably be drinking any bush medicine every day, because there are bush medicines that affect your kidney. I would not drink Circe every day. It's very strong. No. Fever grass is pretty light. That's something that you can probably drink almost every day. So be cautious with that.
Everything in moderation. Everything in moderation.
When we talk about sustainable development, I saw you showed me clips of your farm. I don't know if you're there still, Mr. Higgs. I see you just getting started.
Yes, I'm still,
You're still getting started with your farm.
Yes.
I see people start and stop. What are the reasons why we don't see the farms that we did years ago?
Like I said, it's hard work. I'm not going to tell you no lie. It's hard work. You have to have the will to want to do it and keep it sustainable, because also, it's not profitable, because depending on the crop that you're growing, it's seasonal. So you only make money at a certain season. So with most farmers, I encourage them that look at cash crops that grows in all seasons. So if you have, there's four seasons in the year. So once you know what grows good in winter, what grows good in autumn, what grows good in our spring, what grows good in summer, and you grow them before the season comes. Anyway, there's a plant growing chart. And so once a professional farmer, now if you're a hobbyist and you're just doing this now and then whatever ornamental plants or some lettuce or whatever, you... Hello? You can hear me?
Yes,
yes,
you're back on.
Somebody just keep calling me.
You're
somebody
cutting...
alive. Sorry.
Tell them don't call you. They used to do that to me too.
What I was saying was, once you plan with your crop, you know when to grow it for you to make it sustainable economically. You understand? And that's why I say it's good to talk to a professional farmer or a landscape professional who can help you if you're just doing the backyard farming. They can help you how to set it
up. Okay, so we're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, we're gonna continue, and we're gonna also. So you're breaking up, Mr. Higgs. We're gonna take a quick break, and we will be right back. And when we come back, we have a short clip, and then we'll get back into the conversation. We'll be right back.
Enjoy an elevated mobile experience with BTC giving you
unlimited talk for the best conversations,
unlimited data for all your online fun,
and unlimited roaming to stay connected while overseas
for just $50 per line.
Unlock unlimited mobile talk, data, and roaming when you sign up for BTC Superfast Fiber Internet with speed starting at 100 megabits per second. Enjoy more great savings and value. Upgrade or sign up today. Visit any BTC store or BTCBahamas.com. Conditions apply.
Pediasure, the number one brand recommended by pediatricians, now has 33% less sugar compared to previous formula and provides 25 vitamins and minerals and 7 grams of protein kids need for a healthy growth. It's a convenient meal or snack with a delicious kids-approved taste. Pediasure, nutrition to help kids grow. Ask your pediatrician about Pediasure today.
Doctor is in with me, Dr. Denotha Archer. We just have a short clip and the green economy. Okay, we'll just wait for the producer to get that clip ready.
The future of our world depends on addressing global challenges now. We need to create sustainable livelihoods, feed a growing environment. We need to make the global economy green. Farmers are key to the green economy. They grow the crops to feed, clothe, and produce other renewables for all of us. They manage the land, safeguard natural resources, and help protect biodiversity. Around the world, agriculture accounts for 37% of employment, 34% of land use, 70% of water use, and up to 30% of greenhouse gas emissions. In fact, 97% of agriculture workers live in developing countries, where it is women farmers who grow the majority of our food. Growth from agriculture is at least twice as effective in reducing poverty than any other sector, and it has one of the highest potentials of carbon emissions. We need 70% more food available by 2050. We must increase productivity and reduce waste. We must help farmers share knowledge and access the training and inputs they need to sustainably improve the quantity, quality, and diversity of the crops they grow. And we must help them adapt to changing weather patterns to keep soil fertile and to tackle pests. Farmers also need better access to markets to get supplies and information and to sell their surplus crops more reliably and affordably, further reducing waste. These include local storage, communications, and transport systems. This increases the money they earn and creates more jobs. Farmers can use this to reinvest in their farms and pay for better education and healthcare for their families. When existing farms are more productive, natural habitats and the biodiversities they support can remain intact, and forests can continue to capture carbon and reduce overall emissions related to climate change. Sustainable farming practices like conservation tillage also help prevent soil degradation and keep carbon in the soil. And technologies such as drip irrigation can reduce the amount of water farmers need to use. Culture is essential to the green economy. Let's reverse the big decline in government spending and foreign aid to agriculture that has been happening since the 1980s. Let's invest in agriculture research and create science-based policies that give farmers a variety of innovative solutions from which to choose. Let's enhance agriculture's ability to create jobs and safeguard the environment. Over the next 40 years, we need to provide food, water, jobs, housing, education, and energy for an extra 158,000 people every day. Let's support sustainable agriculture for a green economy by putting farming first.
Okay, that was really interesting. So that touched on a lot of things that I kind of brought up about the sustainability of farming and kind of putting science to the farming industry here in the Bahamas. I think that's where we're kind of behind, just trying to make things more efficient, making resources all available, and people kind of knowing what those resources are. If you want to talk about the green economy, or if you're part of the green economy and you have a comment or a question for us, 323-623-54316, 325-4259. Because as it mentioned, this is a way to create jobs that are going to be rooted in the country, where the money will be staying in the country. Not only helps us to provide the foods, the healthy foods, and I would hope that when we talk about sustainable farming, we're also talking about organic farming. And so I think there's no reason for us to get into the other types of farming. But if we can find a way to make organic foods in our country accessible, cheaper, and just kind of invest some money into that, is where we have a sustainable economy. Any thoughts, Nathaniel, on organic farming and just kind of keeping farming as clean as possible? And is that very difficult with growing crops here?
No. There is no difficulty in growing Bahamian medicinal plants because it grows wild. The only problem with that is we need to, like you said, there's what you call good practices. You know, there's farming good practices. You just can't go in the bush and just pick out any bush medicine and say you're going to sell it on the commercial market. There are regulations that has to be met. And so if you choose to commercialize Bahamian medicinal plants, we have to adhere to good agricultural practices, you know, so that we can sell it on the local market commercially and international market. So see, all of these things people have to be educated on before they say, oh, I want to start selling medicinal plants. No, they're regulations that you have to meet.
Let's look a little broader, because you talk about tomatoes and other plants. Is the average Bahamian farmer using more organic methodology, or are they using, non-organic methods? And if we talk about organic, we mean the way that we grow that is closest to nature, in terms of using pesticides and different things and using what we call GMO seeds with our, genetically modified. Are we sticking close to, because we don't have any regulation here. And that's a big problem. So you can say you're growing one way, you can say you're growing another way. Are you seeing where you're being pushed to grow crops a certain way, or is it any kind of thing going on?
There are good organic, good practices. The problem is because people want to be economically viable, they follow the same international procedures, which they use chemical-based fertilizers and pesticides to keep the certain bugs and thing and so forth off their stuff. I totally dispel that, and I don't use no chemicals. If it wasn't made by Mother Nature, because I'm an environmentalist by nature, I love organic farming because I grew up doing organic farming. I never grew up where I had to use fertilizers and so forth. I learned, about using the different chicken manure, the goat manure, the cow manure, and so forth. And then using the slash and burn method, like I said, because I create my own soil based on those organic method that I learned from my great grandparents. And, and that's why if you taste, depending on the island, I would say the more southern islands, the more organic than the northern hemisphere. I'm not knocking any, I'm just stating the facts, because they want to, hurry up, get that cash, that crop to market. So they're going to use the chemical fertilizers and they're going to use the pesticides. To set in the southern Bahamas, because they are still traditional farmers, they still stick to organic method of fertilizing the soil and also using pesticides and so forth. Like for me, one of our pesticides that we use, depending on the bug, that we'll just make get a bar of soap and use soapy water, because it have the I think it's lilac or something inside of it. And then you have organic compost tea, where you use the neem, because the neem, the chemicals in the neem, it deters certain bugs from going on your crops and being around. So there's different organic methods. That's why you have to talk to a professional farmer and learn these methods, And so that is what I've learned. I tell people, practice good agricultural practice, because it's an international standard, especially in the tourism market. And I will also like to give kudos to Ms. Janet Johnson in the Tourism Development Corporation. I want to thank that board for forming that as well, in which I'm a part of it. And what they is agro-tourism. They're trying to promote, and they're trying to find ways to get farmers to bring their stuff to market in the tourism market, mm-hmm. because like I said, it's a $1 billion food bill for us. Now, and one of those things is in the tourism market.
Yeah.
So that is our way to get into that market of tourism, and then simultaneously trying to get into the local market as well. So we're doing it on two fronts. We're working it on the local market as well as the tourism market. So we're trying to make that money in-house, and we're trying to bring that new money.
Well, I love that. I love that combination of agriculture and tourism. And I think that that's one of the things that, putting those two together, like I said, between tourism and finances, that's 90% of our GDP. If you link that together, that's where most of our money come in. We have over 7 million tourists in a good year. There's only 400,000 Bahamians. So vying, to selling to that market is correct. That is your way into getting into international markets, whilst being, you can be a small sustainable farm right here in the Bahamas. Is that working? Are we seeing an uptick of maybe hotels buying locally? How is that board functioning?
Oh, is yes, it's working. It's working. In fact, I will tell you, if it wasn't for that connection and collaboration, a lot of the farmers would have gone under. Mm-hmm. Because honestly, like I said, yes, the government is given some support and so forth. And in fact, that is also a tourism and agriculture initiative. So I won't give all just the tourism. That is an agriculture initiative. They partnered up together and formed that alliance, which I thank them for that. But even still, I still fault the government. They missed a golden opportunity during this even during Dorian and so forth, because you had, even though the northern hemisphere got a little damage with the farms and so forth, you still had the southern farmers who still was producing.
Okay.
So you could have still purchased in bulk from those farmers to help those in the northern hemisphere, but they rather import.
So
you understand what I'm saying? So it's telling me government intervention.
They didn't really redirect people to within the country. They allowed things to be brought into the country. Do we have a farming registry, like a way for people to just kind of look at a list and see, hey, and this might be a good idea if the farmers would all get together, create a list of the farms, where they're located, what they sell, and when they are seasonally available. I mean, that is something I think, even if the farmers don't want to get together, like on a one-on-one basis together, if we were to come together and pool their resources to have maybe a constant listing online, people may be able to look and say, you know what, I need to buy a ton of tomatoes. All these guys, all these resources are available. All these are options. I think, you know, beyond even government would be great to facilitate that, creating policy around. We still have to come together as Bahamians and make these kind of opportunities.
Yes, exactly. Known.
I think where it comes from is that instead of thinking that we're competing with each other, because all the tomato farms in the entire country probably just make one large farm somewhere else, collectively be a lot stronger than selling on your own. And so by pooling your resources and channeling all your stuff in a particular direction and people being able to go online and see what you have available, digitizing those resources that are available, I think that you have a more sustainable way of meeting the market demand. Your thoughts on that being a farmer?
Yes, I see. Yes, that is exactly why I tried to start the a farmers cooperative, which would I should say modernize in an organic way. But like I said, the thing about Bahamians is coming together and trusting one another. And see, I don't know, for some reason, like I have an idea why, but Bahamians want this.
You want to be politically correct. Instant gratification? They don't want to work
instant
hard.
Instant gratification, but that isn't how farming work. Isn't how farming work. I mean, any business, it takes anywhere from 2 to 5 years before you can see a profit in any business. Yes. But with farming, they believe if they plant a seed today, they should turn a profit a month from now. No! You understand? And that's the issue I have with my Bahamian people. You understand? They like to go into business, and then they want instant gratification. Instead, they take the small profit that a more viable, profitable business. They want to go take a trip. Oh, I make this little couple of $1,000. You know what? I need a break, man. I've been in the sun too long. I need a break. But it don't work like that. You got to be ready to sacrifice 2 to 5 years to make your business successful.
So that's a case of financial illiteracy.
There you go.
Because it may be easy to plant a seed. Where I find most Bahamians do have an issue in business is being able to take that money, turn that profit, and then put it back into the business and make that business sustainable. So on an individual level,
we'll have to micromanage that. It isn't so much.
No, I don't think that you have to micromanage
financial
that.
Financial literacy, it's agribusiness.
That's a part of it, right? Because people take the habits and the things that they do in their normal life and culture. So if you spend every dime that you have, whatever, you have a business, it's working okay, you're going to spend that money as well. So I think even when we give, and see, this is the thing about it, because I don't really believe too much in just giving stuff away. If you do that, I think it should come with a package deal. It should come with some education, business-wise, agro-literacy, financial literacy, business.
Can I interject something?
Sure.
Okay. In the farmers cooperative that I was trying to form, what you are saying is exactly what I was trying to do. Because to be a member, you had to be willing to go through training of good agricultural practices, and to know that in order for you to be a part of this, be a member, you have to know that, hey, we are training you. You have to get global certifications. Also, we were going as a cooperative. We were trying to get each member 5 acres of land where they put those good agricultural practices into place and get the funding. Once we say, okay, then this is the cash crop that all of us are going to eat: tomatoes, sweet peppers, lettuces, okras, and so forth. We were going to grow that as a cooperative, and then when that become profitable, then we introduce other crops. But the thing I say with Bahamians is we don't trust each other and we don't trust the process because we have instant gratification. We see the dollar sign, man, we could tap into this $1 billion easy, but they don't realize that it's going to take anywhere from 2 to 5 years to tap into.
Yeah, and that's where I think the problem lies. Like I said, $2.4 trillion economy in agriculture, $1 billion locally. Problem. So if you want to get involved in the conversation, 323-6232-325-4316, 325-4259. Are you involved in the green economy? Are you doing any kind of sustainable farming? And why aren't we having all these challenges in kind of diversifying our economy? When you look at getting started, what's the starting capital do you think it with a small farm, someone who wants to go to others, what are the financial challenges there? What do you need first?
I will tell anybody if they're just getting started into farming, first start growing it in your yard. Get 5 gallon buckets and get soil. It's what you call a trial and error, because whilst you're growing on a small scale, you're doing your research on your soil, on the type of cash crops you want to grow, how are they seasonal, you know, to make it profitable. So you grow it in a small, you start small and you upscale as you educate. Your education will determine how much you will scale, not the profitability. Because
Just get a 20 acres of farming and just do it right now?
Man, look here. If you get 20 acres, only thing you have to do is get a farmer who are a professional farmer, and you cut that up into plots, and guess what? You start what you call sharecropping. You say you get 20 acres, you cut that up into 20 into 20 farms or 10 farms. You give each farmer an acre and say, okay then, what crop are you going to grow on this? What type of irrigation? Do you have any agricultural good practices certification? And yes, okay then, I have this acre and sharecrop this. You go on this land, and I can do the agribusiness, you do the growing. You don't even have to touch the soil. You just got to know good agricultural business. And see, that's what people fail to realize. Like in any business, there are departments. There's a reason why there are departments, because one person or one department cannot do everything. So whilst you are focusing on good agricultural practices, I am focusing on good agribusiness practices. And that's the problem.
I think you just came up with a really good idea. Let the business people get the plots. Let the small
That's why I was forming the cooperative.
Yeah, but see, I don't know. It doesn't seem like farmers want to work with farmers. So maybe farmers will work with
Thank you very much. There is a lot of bad blood among farmers in the Bahamas.
They can focus on farming, and the business persons can focus on that part of it. Like the model rent an area and do your little business there, and then there's printers and stuff like that available for you. I think that's an awesome, we should talk afterwards, because that sounds like a good way to go. A way of doing farming so that the farmers, because you know, not everybody is going to be interested in the business aspect of it.
No.
Some people love farming, they want to be able to get into farming. You don't want to think about all those details of how the money goes and where, how to get the crops.
Marketing and all of that.
And by doing that type of model, we can put something together which makes this all very sustainable, in the sense that people can focus on their niche of the market whilst running it the other way. And I kind of think that's what you wanted to do with the cooperative. But I think the problem is, for some reason, people in the same business don't like to work together.
No.
They prefer someone from the outside to come in, control, a non-competing factor.
Yes.
And so I think right here, we solved the problem of how to get the farmers to work together.
Yes.
We have a non-competing factor that will be the glue. And that's where I thought the government would come in. But if we have to do it on a private scale,
I thought so too. It's
not a problem. And this is why I talked to you earlier, that even though the government is doing pretty decent job recently, I think, with getting out there with farming, there isn't really the cohesive glue, the plan and the structure to make these farmers not only sustainable, but profitable. And that's where doing it on a grander scheme comes in. Because at the end of the day, people want to make money. They want to tap into these markets. They want to know 10 years down the line that they can provide from their family, from their farming initiative. Body wants to be on government assistance.
I will tell you this. If the government will simply earmark in the budget, on the agricultural budget, $5 million, not even five, $2 million to go directly to helping farmers improve their existing farms, trust me, we can have food security within 5 years. Within 5 years, we can have food security if the government aims specific farms. That only thing farmers acknowledge. They have the education. They have the will. They've been advocating for government assistance in numerous parts of their farms, whether it be feed, seeds, soil, heavy equipment. If the government will start doing practical stuff instead of theoretical stuff, because I can tell you something, they have a lot of theory on paper, but they haven't put it on the ground as yet.
Now, I've tapped into your passion, Mr. Higgs, and we have a caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Yes, good night, Dr. D.
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay. And good night to Mr. Higgs. I just have a question. I always have in, but I wanted to know if he's been out at the farmer's market, because I believe he's sincere as far as organic, because I always am dubious about organics. You know, we don't do gas chromatography. We don't do paper chromatography. You know, I learned chromatography from high school, right? Which you know what it's all about, Dr. D. And so otherwise, we really don't know if they put in chemicals in these plants, and We don't know what the people are sending here for us to analyze through the chromatography. And so, even though I'm a non-pundit, right, Dr. D, I'm afraid that people are using medicine and knowledge from school to try and, I mean, I did it up to college, but I dropped it, trying to, like, gaslight and brainwash as if you can't question something as if only them might have intelligence. I don't know if you hold that idea, like, only... I mean, I know you're very bright, but you really think you know everything, or you could remember everything? I'm reading the medical field. And so, you know, I have something I'd like to say as far as the, I noticed you was talking about natural medicine, right? And he's talking about the bush medicine and stuff like that. And so that's where the chromatography comes in. And also, are you familiar with the Sesuvium paulatulastrum? I think they call it, they got this information from Dr. Davil, right? And so they call it sea purslane. And so this is something that grows in the mangroves, and it's succulent, and it has the highest amount of vitamin A of all the green leafy vegetables. It's very edible. It has a high salt content, all right? And as far as vaccine, right, the Matrix M that comes from the Chilean Molina tree, right, which has the saponins, right? This adjuvant boosts the immune system, the robustness of the immune response. So I was wondering if this can boost the immune system in a vaccine. Have they tried it by itself to see the efficacy on the immune system as far as the upscaling the immunogenicity of the plant itself, versus just putting it in a vaccine, and so they're gaslighting us in with their knowledge into our ignorance. And I'll just listen to the comment, but I want to say something that I think is very important that I arrived at because of my studies and just common sense. I'm telling you, Dr. D, I need you to answer this question on air for me. I'll just listen for what you all have to say to what I said.
Well, I would say this: there's a lot of medicinal plants that are not studied in this country. So for a country that has a lot of natural resources in terms of plants that are unstudied and just, you know, plants that grow here, we do not have any focus on studying these plants. We don't have a budget that looks at research like that in this country. We have the University of the Bahamas.
I think they should be playing a more integral role.
Yeah, they should be involved in not only. I'm shocked to say we're surrounded by water.
Yeah, you know, but Dr. D, Dr. D, I'm not cutting you off. I was 57 on Sunday, right? And so I have a prescription I have a nutritional prescription healing book, right? It's 30-something years old, right? And so in this book, it actually speaks to, like, let's say sage. They say sage should not be every day because it interferes with iron absorption. And you know, within the cells, some plants only the leaves and stems and roots, according to that, which you use because of toxicity. And so it's the moringa tree is one. They said the seeds are toxic, and the seeds can be used to extract heavy metals out of the water. So the seeds are not to be made to be consumed. I consume the leaves and the flowers. And so we need people like you to promote sensible dialogue about plant medicine, right? But the thing is, Dr. D.
Research in general, I find that and in almost every area in this country, we invest absolutely nothing into research.
All right, Dr. D, if I was to look up the catnip, I remember reading up on the catnip. I was astounded that catnip have all of the B vitamins. I didn't even know they had B9 and all. Catnip have about 7 B vitamins in it. Catnip. This is, you understand what I'm saying? And so, but I don't want to do a paradigm, but I'm upset with the status quo because Dr. D, this is the information era. And then the sensor, if I could question, people question God, so I should be able to question doctors anyway. I found out that virologists, especially genetic molecular scientists are very rare as far as genetics and molecular science and retrobiology and all these, et cetera. Now, the fact that you have the Johnson & Johnson and the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine that produces the spike protein. This takes place in the nucleus, I guess, expelled into the cytoplasm, hence into the blood, right? The immune system responds to the spike protein, which is an artificial spike protein. It's a lookalike. It's an imitation of the spike protein. So now you have an imitation of the spike protein. The macrophages, et cetera, the dendritic cells, they respond to this presence of this spike protein in the blood, right? So now you're trying to tell me that a variant, which is 99.9% similar to the original strain, my immune system ain't gonna recognize that, Ms. Dr. D. That's what you're trying to tell me now? They're trying to put antibodies when we know that the antibodies have isotypes and they mutate and differentiate in the germline center for specificity. These people don't have no, Dr. D. What I'm saying is, these people don't have no patterns. But yet still, they won't brainwash me. But what I'm saying is, Dr. D, the immune system. See, they're gaslighting us as far. I learned some things from Dr. Gregbaum and Bosch. I ever knew some things, and I'm using common sense. All right, as far as the immune system is concerned, the immune system is quite complicated. They're just looking at the efficacy and the integral role that the dendritic cells play, which is the dendritic, the monocytes, the macrophages. All of those are phagocytotic components of the immune system. They play a role in the innate and the adaptive immune response.
Because a lot of people aren't going to get into all of that. I would say the key thing, right, and then we'll end with that. The key thing here is if you look into the Pfizer studies that are being done out of Israel, which is mostly a fully vaccinated country, you can see the changes in the efficacy rate as the way that the vaccine works with the variants over time. And you will see that there is a change in the efficacy rate in the way that it works. So the science is out there. I don't know why they're censoring or they have an issue with different opinions and actual facts. That's the strangest thing. And I don't think that they realize that the more that they do that, the more people are going to be cautious. Mm-hmm. Give everybody all of the information, allow grown adult people to make choices for themselves, and just definitely leave my children alone. So, but the information is out there. It's an ongoing thing. We're getting more and more data every day. And so if you are feeling cautious about the vaccine, look it up for yourself. Speak. There is a lot of information that's out there. There's information that's coming out. And go through it with your physician, because what I find is there is a lot of things that are being said in a way that us as scientists, we interpret quite differently than the public would interpret. And it may be a bit misleading for some reason why they want a particular narrative to be out there. But I believe in patients having the choice to choose and knowing and being informed. So all information, the good and the bad, and you as an adult can decide what risks you want to take, what you're willing to do, where your health is. You discuss that with your physician. We should be stratifying people based on their risk. And that's how we should be dealing with this from the very beginning, because we always seem to end back to the pandemic. It's just consuming all of our lives. is that if we had taken, we would be looking at this in a much different way. We look at the countries with the most amount of deaths are the ones that did not protect the elderly population very early on, even though we had information about COVID and the groups that it was affecting. And so you will see more and more doctors are coming out talking about this risk stratification, how we should be planning and strategically dealing with it, why we're having variants. And, you know, I don't know why science is a search for truth. I've never seen a time when people speaking the truth and speaking about the data that's out there has been problematic. So continue, people, to be, you know, vigilant and do what you need to do. Study for yourself, speak with your physician, and do the things that are going to keep you healthy in this time. Nobody knows for certain who's going to, if you're not going to catch COVID, but we do know that there are certain people who are more at risk than others. And if we can contain this a lot better if we were focused. So we veered off a lot, Mr. Higgs. But I think that came into the topic of Higgs bringing up growing our medicinal.
No, it's still on topic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just that he just went a little deeper.
Yeah,
because some of those procedures he called off. I don't really know all of those, but some of those that he talked about, a botanist will know. And like I said,
but he was talking about cellular biology at that point in time. And, you know, I have an honors degree in biochemistry, and I did a lot of molecular biology. And, you know, but I am not the average person listening out there. They don't want to hear about phagocytes. I always try to elevate the conversation, but also bring it to on a level where we all can kind of understand and follow what's going on.
Exactly.
And the caller is very knowledgeable, but, you know, speaking quickly and all of that info, it's going to lose some people. We want people to be educated and understand and follow
and understand what you're saying. You got to speak in layman terms.
He always brings interesting points.
He always does. He really does.
323-6232. We have a few more minutes. 325-4316. 325-4259. In just an hour and a half, we have solved the problem with the farmers. All we need is the money and the land. That's all you got to do. So someone out there, give me the money and the
land. That's it.
I just solved the problem for all the farmers. And
money and the land, and we'll make it out.
The money and the land, that's all we need. And that solves most problems, the money and the land. All right? So government, you want to come my way, or you private investor together, and let's get all these farms together, because I think this can be something very profitable, not just tapping into the $1 billion that we spend here in the country, but as I said, $2.4 trillion worldwide. Why aren't we getting a piece of that pie? That can change the Bahamian economy if we just grow the right crops. Like I said, I was trying to get some land because I have a very good idea on specific cash crops that we can grow right now. There are certain foods on the market that are hard to get. We're very close to United States, so not just tapping into the market here with tourism, but we're 30 minutes away from Florida. Why? We have a good connection with Canada. You know, that's where I was at school and stuff like that. Why are we making those kind of connections? Why are we importing mangoes from other people's countries? Why are we importing avocados from other people's countries? I was going down Fox Hill. I'm going to give Fox Hill people a little prop. I saw the most beautiful avocados, native avocados. I hardly ever go out Fox Hill area, but I'm coming back to look for those avocados. They were absolutely beautiful. Yeah. And these are the trees that are growing naturally here. Not the stuff that we get inside the food store, which I wonder why I waste my money buying sometimes. Right?
I mean, so, I will tell all Bahamians, and I just use the avocado as an example. We grow different variants of avocados in the Bahamas. You have the long ones, you have the short ones, you have the thick ones, you understand? And I'll tell you, buy a store-bought one and buy a local avocado, and do a taste test. The taste test lets you know everything.
You're absolutely right. So I had an avocado from the food store the other day. It was absolutely horrible. I throw most of them away. I just keep the hope that one of them will be good. And you have to buy 10 before I can find one good one. And so I get excited when I see Bahamian avocados, yes. right? So I want to see them in the food store when they're doing it. I want us to find a way because we have sunshine and sea almost all year round. Why can't we be growing avocados all the time? We need to find out. And that's where the science of agriculture comes in.
Thank
because
you.
Why can't we have avocados growing all season long and have that as a crop that we can have all the time? I love avocados.
It also
a lot of people love avocados. And that's what it is. Take $1 million, invest it in finding a way to grow avocados all year round.
We can do it.
Right?
We just need the resources to build our greenhouses to have climate control that we can do it. Like I said, there's the education and the knowledge is in the country. We only need the land and the money.
The land and the money. You hear that?
That's so it. We go right back to the land and the money.
Provide me with the land and the money. I've been trying to get the land, and it's difficult because to find the amount of land that you need, you have to go through Crown Land because they have pretty much land is out of the reach of most Bahamians in terms of cost if you want a lot of land. So I would like my Crown Land grant so I can do my agriculture, create money and jobs for our Bahamian people. And turn this thought of agriculture into just some type of slave work into something else, something that people can see a future in where you're going to make that kind of money and you're going to get wealthy because there are particular crops that specifically grow in this country that if we were exporting these crops, you know, that would be, you know.
Every island needs a cannery.
Yeah. And I think we can dedicate specific crops to each island.
Yes, and we can. We do it now.
Planning for each
If I say Elutra, everybody know pineapple off the top.
Yeah, but are we growing pineapples the way we used to? So
no, we're not. Because that generation is almost about died off.
We allowed Hawaii to overcome us.
Thank you.
And they actually, that pineapple was developed here in the Bahamas.
Thank you very much.
We have the Eleuthera pineapple grown in Hawaii, and we're bringing them in.
Thank you very much. It's the same thing with Morton salt. Mm-hmm. We take the salt from Inagua. We send it to the Americas. They sell it back to us in the stores.
Yep. And so we really need to grab a hold of our resources. And I think that we have the potential to do that if we have not only the political will, but the will of the people. I think the connection we need to make is getting the money and the land together with the people who are willing to work it. I think one of the most wonderful things about the U.S. is it's easy to find the money to match the talent.
Yes.
Here we have a more difficult time in finding that kind of investment. But I think if we start putting together the people with the ideas, with the people with the money, we will see the returns. And just like that, Mr. Higgs, the show is just about done. Isn't that something? A whole hour and a half gone by. We started talking about the green economy. We ventured into agriculture. We touched on the vaccine. And we came back to making a sustainable economic model in agriculture for Bahamians. So I want to thank you, Mr. Higgs. You got 30 seconds to just give us a little quick summary of what you want the Bahamian people to take away from this, and we're out of here.
What I'd like the Bahamian people to take away from this, everybody have a green thumb. As the only thing you need to do is educate yourself on crops that you like to eat and start doing backyard farming. Do your research on backyard farming and go from there. Grow two crops and that's it.
Okay, awesome. Start with your two crops and get it started. And then tell your neighbor to do the same because there's a lot of Bahamian plants that we don't see anymore locally. Sugar cane used to be growing everywhere. Guava trees, dillies, sapodillas. So let's get some of those back in rotation. And, you know, so I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight with me, Dr. D. Archer, brought to you by Medical Concierge Services 326-1521-429-4880. Call me. You know, if you got that land and the money, let's make it happen. And
sound
also
like
check out our website. Medical Concierge Services. We're also on Facebook. And this is The Doctor Is In. We'll see you next. Thank you, Mr. Higgs.